When you run a charitable organization that serves people with needs, you're obligated to be transparent and open so no questions are created and your source of funding isn't put at risk. That combined with having a noble cause creates the success and the effectiveness that you certainly need. The Wounded Warrior Project at least appeared to be one of those charities that understood all of this, but in 2016, the dark cloud formed over it. Accusations were being made, which compelled people to withhold their financial support that the organization gave to our veterans. Were these questions created by facts, or did someone or some people have agendas? What lessons can be learned by what the Wounded Warrior Project went through and overcame to thrive as it does today? That is the focus of my next guest's new book, Wounded Charity, Lessons Learned from the Wounded Warrior Project Crisis, written by an advisor to various nonprofits and philanthropists, as well as he's also an adjunct faculty member of Southern University's Valerie Center for Philanthropy, Doug White. Thanks for being here today, Doug.
Well, thank you for having me, Chris. I appreciate being here.
And learn more about Wounded Charity and Doug's work, DougWhite.net. That's DougWhite.net. So, I mean, we've seen this before. I think maybe the more widely known occurrence with a charitable organization was the revelations that were made about Easter Seals a decade and a half ago that really that cast a dark cloud on many organizations, but those who were transparent and had the proof could chase those clouds away. But with the Wounded Warrior Project, how did this come to your attention?
A volunteer called me after CBS and the New York Times ran their stories. I had written a commentary in a newspaper about Charity Navigator, a negative commentary. And Charity Navigator is a charity watchdog, at least that's what they say they are. And I had written something that was critical of them, and CBS and the New York Times used Charity Navigator as a resource. And that volunteer got my name that way. I had never had any contact with Charity Wounded Warrior Project before then. And so he called me out of the blue, knowing that I was critical of the way CBS and New York Times had used that as a resource, and wanted me to find out more about this, because what was written and what was aired was not the organization, he said, was not the organization that he knew. And he asked me to touch base with their senior leadership, which I did. They asked me to do a soup-to-nuts kind of review of the organization after a financial audit was going to be done. I said I could not do that at the time. I was working full-time at Columbia University and couldn't really devote that time. But they said, well, let's just stay in touch. At the end of a month, those two guys were fired. And what happened was that review that they said was taking place, the audit, came through and said basically that nothing was wrong. Essentially, nothing was wrong. It was a good organization. Yes, there needed to be some improvements in terms of policy upgrades and so forth, but not the kind of thing that would be startling. But they were fired at the same time. And that startled the volunteer who originally called me, and he called me back and said, now I'm really confused.
Yeah.
And he wanted me to look into it. So that's how I got into it. I had no prior connection to Wounded Warrior Project. I knew no one there. When I did the reports, I did a report first and then the book, the research for the book. No one paid anything to me or anything like that. I did it all on my own.
And the story has, I mean, it's a single idea story, but there's so many facets to it. You mentioned Charity Navigator. If you look at charity ratings, that's the one that always comes up first or at least high up on your Google search results. And I always had a problem with them because I've had a long association with the Muscular Dystrophy Association. And Charity Navigator took a big notch out of MDA's ratings only because the sole reason was because the head of the organization at the time, Bob Ross, who had been with MDA since 1950, I mean, that was his life. He never married, never had kids. His family was that organization. And they had a problem that he was getting paid $300,000 a year. And my counter to that was, well, let's put Bob Ross in General Electric, just as an example of a conglomerate. If someone is at a high end of an organization for 50 years, I kind of think they're going to be making more than $300,000 in the commercial world.
That is correct. If you indulge me, I wrote an article. The article that this person responded to, or the reason he, I'm just going to read you one or two sentences just so you get a sense of what I think of Charity Navigator.
Sure.
Here it is. It's time for Charity Navigator to leave the scene. The watchdog service has done enough damage. Nonprofits are supposed to improve society, but Charity Navigator has improved nothing. Charity Navigator dumbs down the conversation about the real impact charities have or should have on our society. As a result, the public needlessly focuses on irrelevant information. So that's just part of that article that I wrote a couple of years ago. And this was what CBS and New York Times, and like you say, a lot of people think of when they want to look at charities. And what you just said is more true than anything. And that's why, by the way, I didn't write the headline, but the headline writers put it in as Charity Navigator must grow up or shut down. I think that captured it. So what happened here was the news media were using, there were other allegations too, don't get me wrong, but they were using Charity Navigator as a resource to claim that some amount of money was being spent on overhead, and they didn't like that number, and so that was part of the criticism. Well, that particular number was incorrect. Charity Navigator provided false information. That's another part of the problem. Not only was the information that you do get out of that process questionable in terms of evaluating a charity, but the actual information was factually and mathematically incorrect. Charity Navigator defended itself when I interviewed the guy who ran it by saying, well, we don't take into account certain things. So I said, okay, so you're basically overriding the guidelines that the IRS says a charity should use and the generally accepted accounting principles that the accounting profession uses. You're just saying you're better than they are at this. And they said, well, basically, if a charity has a problem with the way we do things, they can call us and we can correct it if they feel it's wrong. So, well, why is it up to them to do that work? Why are you putting them in that position? So Charity Navigator, to me, is a blight on the process. That isn't to say we don't need to evaluate charities. We do. And the charity world is partly at fault for not really filling in that gap. But there is a gap, and Charity Navigator has filled it, and it's filled it very, very badly. And to get back to Wounded Charity, it was a large part of why Wounded Charity got its criticism, and Wounded Charity for the last 3 years has suffered as a result of that crisis.
With Doug White with his book, Wounded Charity, Lessons Learned from the Wounded Warrior Project Crisis. DougWhite.net is Doug's website and listening to Issues and Ideas. I'm assuming that Wounded Warrior Project, much like any legitimate organization, you want to be transparent. Did they have annual reports? Did they have all the necessary forms filed with the IRS? Were they on spot with everything that they needed to do as a responsible organization?
This is the irony. They did. You know, I've looked at thousands and thousands and thousands of charities around the United States over the last 25 or 30 years, and I can tell you that one of the bigger problems is transparency, disclosure. Many people say that, well, we file a 990, which is the information return they send to the IRS, therefore we're transparent enough. And so my feeling is that charities, for the most part, need to be far more transparent, far more aggressively transparent. The irony is, and this is one of the criticisms that came through in the reports at CBS and New York Times, the irony is that I would imagine no other charity in the country was doing a better job. They not only 990s, the IRS form is available on a website called GuideStar, but Wounded Warrior didn't rely only on that. They put the 990 on their own website. They also put their audited financials, which is not required, on their own website. They also put the progress of their programs on their website. What I mean by progress is they have a narrative as well as a mathematical evaluation of each program, evaluated by the users of the program. This is the kind of thing I've been asking charities to do for all of their programs all over the United States. They were already doing it. So what was really hard to take in was the criticism that they needed to be more transparent. They were more transparent than any other charity in the United States. And that was a real sticking point for me. And another criticism, just while I'm on that roll, is that they were criticized for spending too much money on areas that didn't have anything to do with programming. One of them was that it was spending money on alcohol at a conference or at conferences, when it turns out that that was a completely false statement. It was wrong. And the person who was making it was wrong. And yet CBS and the New York Times used this one person's testimony, if you will, as evidence that there was something really amiss at Wounded Warrior Project. So there was so much that was wrong. And I have to tell you one other thing. I am of the persuasion to think that charities are oftentimes doing the wrong thing. And I want to root that out. I have no patience for charities to rely on the fact that they're a charity and then hide bad behavior. That's a lot of what I have done in the past. So I was, when I first heard this story, willing to believe that there was something very wrong. So when I came to my conclusions, it was totally the opposite of what I expected at the very beginning. These allegations just had no merit at all.
Now, as far as the organization itself, Wounded Warrior Project, I made the analogy with Bob Ross before about putting him into a conglomerate. By and large, a charity of this financial magnitude is run just as a business would be run. You have to with that kind of money. You have the individuals in various positions, but you also have a board of directors of an organization. How well did those two sides play with each other in the organization of the Wounded Warrior Project?
For a long time, they played very well with each other. You're absolutely correct. The board relationship with the senior management is crucial. But let me just answer the first part of your comment first, and that is that the salary that Steve Nardese, the CEO, is earning was very much in line with other charities of that size. It was a huge organization. It was almost $400 million per year. He was making about $400,000, and that was very much in line with other organizations like that. But with his talent, he could have gone to, like you say, GE or something like that and made far more. So the money thing was just a red herring. Now, in terms of the relationship with the board, part of the issue here is that the board, I think, did the kneecapping. As much as I would criticize the media for this, I think the board let that happen. In fact, I know the board let that happen. And the board actually created the problem. And so what was going on, the board was getting pressured by the military because they didn't like the advertisements Wounded Warrior was running, and they wanted to be more friendly to make sure that people would continue to sign up. And so they didn't like the ads. Wounded Warrior Project wouldn't change the ads. And so the board started to get anxious. And I believe that they were NACAPed. I believe they were by the board. So at the very end, when they found an opportunity to criticize Steve and Al, Steve Nardese, the CEO, and Al Giordano, the COO, they took an opportunity to fire them with really no reason. In fact, it was the opposite. They were fired for doing a good job.
Absolutely incredible. And I'm not going to go further into this because obviously I want you to read Doug's book, Wounded Charity, and especially if you run an organization, because it's a lesson book of, well, how to watch your back, as you just heard in this instance, but also to stay true to your focus. Because at what point does, if you read the mission statement, the Wounded Warrior Project, at what point does serving as a recruitment tool for the military come into the picture?
It does not at all. And you're asking the best question, because what's come out from this is an understanding that the military and the veterans community are not the same one. Now, you'd think they'd have aligned interests, and they do for the most part. But the Wounded Warrior charities, the charities that serve wounded veterans, have a mission to take care of the veterans. Their mission is not to enhance the military's readiness. That's not a bad mission, don't get me wrong. That is not something that charities want not to have, but that's not their mission. And so in pursuing it, they have to be independent. So your question of making that separation is crucial for people to understand.
Just to wrap things up, you look in your pocket. I got a spare $20 in my pocket this week. I'd like to do something positive with. Would you give that $20 to the Wounded Warrior Project right now today?
I would, and I'll tell you why. Even though they've been wounded, they haven't been knocked out, and they're going to come back, but they won't come back with the same vision. Now, let's put it this way. If I were to put it on a scale from 1 to 10, their vision before was 10, okay? Now I would say it's at 6 or 7, but many others are at 1 or 2. So even though they're less in terms of their vision than they were a couple of years ago, they're very strong, and they're very good, and they're doing something that no other veterans organization is doing. And I don't really assign any malice to the current administration there. The current CEO has had a very tough time bridging from before to now, and the board is pretty much changing over. I do believe there are some issues with regard to how cozy they want to be with the military, but by the same token, they're serving veterans in a very good way. I just wish they were able to serve more.
Well, you make best out of a situation that others have created, but what Doug does with Wounded Charity, lessons learned from the Wounded Warrior Project crisis, you learn about how something like this can happen, and maybe even more importantly, how do you overcome when something like this happens? It's through support, through dedication, it's through a vision, it's through clarity and transparency. Those are the key elements of any organization, of a charity, as well as a commercial business, if you want to get right down to it. Wounded Charity, lessons learned from the Wounded Warrior Project crisis. Doug's website, DougWipe.net, and to find out more about the work and to support the work of the Wounded Warrior Project, WoundedWarriorProject.org. Doug, you've done the organization justice. And you've reminded us all about the importance of helping our veterans through the work of the Wounded Warrior Project. Thanks so much for the book and for being here today.
And Chris, it's been my pleasure to be with you.